From Washington, we bring you now another ABC special event.
This is John Edwards in Washington. The Senate committee investigating the Howard Hughes-Henry Kaiser warplane contracts turned the spotlight today on Howard Hughes himself. The tall, thin millionaire Hughes repeated under oath his charges, so widely publicized recently, that Senator Brewster of Maine had offered to call off the investigation if Hughes would merge his Transworld airline with Pan American Airways. And then suddenly the spotlight spread to include Senator Brewster, the Republican chairman of the Senate War Investigating Committee. Brewster stepped away from the committee table and took the witness stand as a private citizen and, under oath, flatly denied the charges. ABC recorded the entire testimony today, and in the next 30 minutes you will hear recorded excerpts of what took place. What you hear in the background now marked the beginning of Hughes' appearance, the flush of excitement which spread through the crowded Senate caucus chamber as he made his dramatic entrance. So listen now for 45 seconds to the way it began.
The committee will come to order, please. Quiet, please. And let it be known that we must have five in the room. Mr. Hughes, will you come to the witness chair, please? Will you just raise your right hand to be sworn? You do solemnly swear in the matter now pending before this committee to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Just be seated.
Well, that's the way it began. The reporters of the press and radio and the representatives of the newsreel and picture companies could not remember a hearing which had attracted so much attention in years. The lines outside the caucus chamber began forming at 8 o'clock this morning, more than 6.5 hours before Hughes made his afternoon appearance. The Senate office building, where the caucus chamber is located, is a huge block-square marble building on Capitol Hill, only a few steps from the Capitol building itself. From its big corner entrance facing the Capitol, the long corridors spread out like ribs of a fan. On the steps in the Washington midsummer sun, the curious began forming early. Secretaries from the senatorial offices inside, photographers, reporters, taxi drivers, many autograph hunters among them. One little girl was guided by her mother to the curb as Hughes finally stepped from his taxicab. But the police roped off the entrance, and Hughes, in gray flannel suit, white shirt, dark blue polka-dotted necktie and brown shoes, strode up the steps and into the building without a smile, without looking either to the right or left. Inside on the balcony overlooking the marble entrance vestibule, the crowd stretched from the caucus room door halfway down a block-long corridor. There wasn't a hope of their getting inside, for the inside was already crowded. Even the windowsills were filled, and it was a crowd liberally sprinkled with many attractive and smartly dressed women. Well, I saw a few reporters I've seen at many hearings before who rarely bother to pay much attention to their appearance. But today they had a little something extra, perhaps a new hat or a bright summer dress, maybe a flower in the hair. Behind the long senatorial table sat a group of senatorial wives and some guests, one of them a familiar face, a person almost never absent at such hearings, Alice Roosevelt Longworth, daughter of the late President Theodore Roosevelt and widow of the late Speaker of the House Nicholas Longworth. Well, now to go on with the hearing, Senator Ferguson of Michigan, whose voice you will hear so frequently, speaks first. He is the chairman of the special subcommittee handling the Hughes investigation. And you'll notice that he speaks rather loudly at times, for Mr. Hughes is hard of hearing as the result of his airplane accident of some months ago.
Now, if the chair might just make an observation on the record, this hearing was begun for the purpose of looking into two contracts, one with the Defense Plant Corporation, a division of the RFC, that was known as the cargo plane contract. The other was the F-11 or the photo reconnaissance plane. It naturally was the desire of the committee to complete that. It is apparent now, as indicated on the record, that there has come into the light and into this matter a secondary matter. That is, a statement or challenge as to the good faith of the committee in this investigation. Normally, a committee would not digress to allow that to be brought into the case. If that was the custom and the rule, it is certain that committees could not function because all that would be necessary would be to raise an outside issue, and it would take all the time and attention of the committee to try an outside issue. But as this matter goes directly to the committee as a whole, that is the subcommittee, feels that we should go into it as it concerns the committee.
Well, now Senator Ferguson is heard again as he continues to explain matters to Mr. Hughes.
While we're going to try this side issue, we are not going to make it part and parcel of the regular hearing.
That is quite agreeable to me.
Not to be trying one sentence in this and another sentence in the regular hearing. So it's your desire, Mr. Hughes, is it at the present time to go into the matter as to the committee at the present time or one of its members?
Not my desire, but I'm very willing to.
Well, there's no desire upon the part of the committee to force you to go into this matter before the committee.
You don't have to force me. I'm very happy to do it.
Well, then you may proceed.
Well,
I would ask you this. What is it that you want to tell the committee in relation to this side issue, as the committee now sees it?
I don't have any particular desire to tell the committee anything. I think the committee is thoroughly familiar with it. I have made certain statements to the press, and I stand by those. Senator Brewster has then said that he would like me to repeat those statements under oath. I have no objection to so doing. I think, however, if I do so, Senator Brewster should take the stand, allow me to cross-question him, and allow me to bring in such other witnesses as I desire to clarify the issue.
Well, now, I just, and this has been discussed by the subcommittee, the understanding of the subcommittee that we will apply the regular rules as far as cross-examination. The committee, the subcommittee, will not give to Senator Brewster the right to cross-examine you, nor will you have the right to cross-examine Senator Brewster.
All right, that point seems settled. So Howard Hughes makes his first charge against Senator Brewster, where he said, "I charge specifically." This is Senator Ferguson speaking first.
What do you have to say about this matter that you had?
I think my charges have been made pretty clear in the press.
Well,
you want me to reiterate them?
They are not part of the record. And it's the desire of the committee, if any statements are made, that they be made here under oath and not through the medium of the press.
Well, I charge specifically that during a luncheon in the Mayflower Hotel,
I interrupt, it's not to bother you at all, but I'd like to get the date as you go along and give us your personal knowledge of the facts, and then we probably can let you go right along with your conversation.
Senator, I'm trying to be very accurate in this matter, and I'm trying not to make any statement unless I am quite sure of it. Now, the luncheon was during the week commencing February 10th, 1947. It was in the suite of Senator Brewster. And I charge specifically that during that luncheon, the senator, in so many words, told me that if I would agree to merge TWA with Pan American Airways and go along on his community airline bill, that there would be no further hearing in this matter.
Now, Howard Hughes was on the stand today for perhaps 45 minutes. And later, Senator Brewster was on the stand for more than an hour and a half. Why, but some rather intricate dubbing and timing, which we at ABC have completed only a few minutes ago, we are picking out excerpts from one part of the afternoon and then from another. In other words, you'll hear a charge from Howard Hughes and then an answer from Senator Brewster. Now, you've heard Howard Hughes' charge. Here is the answer from Senator Brewster.
As to the statement, the very precise statement he makes, as to my proposing to him in my apartment in the Mayflower, where I was entertaining him at lunch, for which I paid $8.80 out of my own pocket, I seems inconceivable to me that anyone could seriously contemplate that one who had been in public life as long as I have, and the state legislature, as governor of Maine, as a member of Congress and the Senate, could, on the short acquaintance I had with Mr. Hughes, as he said, I'd only seen him once before when I was a guest of his in the Constellation, along with Senator Ferguson and Senator Vandenberg and Senator Barkley and Senator Truman, that on the very brief acquaintance which that necessarily represented, and the meeting with him here in Washington, which I think he is substantially correct about as to the duration of them, that I would have made so bald a proposition as he here describes. It sounds to me a little more like Hollywood than it does like Washington. I am quite sure that no one of any competence or experience here would make such a proposal, and I can assure you that I never did.
Now back to Howard Hughes. More of what he had to say about the Mayflower Hotel incident. Again, this is Senator Ferguson speaking first.
Do you know of anything that the committee did to either carry out what you claim was asked or not to carry it out?
Would you repeat that?
Do you know of anything that the committee did to carry out what you have claimed Senator Brewster asked or requested or desired? Do you know of anything that the committee did to carry it out or not to carry it out?
Well, Senator, I have no microphone in your secret conference room, but I can only say that the following events transpired after this luncheon. Now, during the luncheon, I told Senator Brewster that I had previously discussed the matter with Juan Tripp during dinner in his apartment at the Mayflower Hotel, that I had promised to give him my answer in 30 days. Thereafter, I dispatched Mr. Dietrich to Mr. Tripp in New York and asked Mr. Dietrich to find out on just what terms Mr. Tripp had in mind this deal. Mr. Dietrich reported to me that he didn't think it would be possible to make an equitable transaction with Mr. Tripp.
Mr. Dietrich that you're talking about is Noah Dietrich?
That's right, of my company. So,
and Tripp is the president of Pan America?
Juan Tripp, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I told Mr. Dietrich to drop the matter there, at least temporarily. Just about that time, Mr. Flanagan arrived on the scene in California and started getting very tough about this investigation. Up to that time, everything had been very friendly, just a sort of a veiled threat. But Mr. Flanagan hove on the scene and started asking all the embarrassing questions he could think of, and it was quite apparent to me that the timing was the application of screws after my refusal to go through with Mr. Tripp.
Now, here is Senator Brewster's answer.
We did discuss community company, and I think he mentioned the matter of a possible merger with Pan America. I had not heard of it before. Whether he mentioned the name of Mr. Tripp, I'm not clear, but I am clear that this is the first time I ever heard of a Pan-American apartment or room in the Mayflower. I thought I knew quite a good deal about them, but I never knew of that. And I noted he referred here in his testimony to the fact that... Sorry, the rest of those... to the fact that he had had dinner in Tripp's apartment at the Mayflower Hotel. I noted that at the time. That's the first I ever heard of that, because I never knew they had one. They've evidently passed me up on that. Now, what happened between Mr. Hughes and Mr. Tripp after that time, I have no knowledge. I never had any knowledge of Mr. Tripp's trip out to California, of which he speaks, or the fact he was considering it, or the conversations that were going on.
Senator Brewster, at the Mayflower, you have stated in the beginning your version of it.
Yes.
But was there anything said about putting the hearings on or putting the investigation on or taking it off? Or?
Not a word. Not a word. There was nothing discussed of that character at all.
Anything from which one would draw the conclusion that the committee would call the meeting off, or you would call it off? Or?
Not the slightest. The hearing
conditions? Or?
No, the hearing had been held that morning, and as appeared here in the evidence, and I'd like to refer to that.
Well, now, here is a matter which Hughes did not mention today, but Brewster made a comment on the charge, which has been given some circulation recently, and it's an item which seems to fit in at this point.
I saw a quotation in the press that Mr. Hughes had stated that on the trip to South America, which Mrs. Brewster and I carried out last November and December, that I was the guest of Pan America. I was interested that was one of the matters he did not repeat on oath. But I think that I will give it that amount of attention, and I would like to submit for the record the canceled check which I hold in my hand and the date of December 20th, 1946, to the Pan American Airways for $2,028.60, which covered the transportation of Mrs. Brewster and myself completely around South America.
Now back to Howard Hughes again, and this concerns a charge about Francis Flanagan, the investigator of the committee.
Mr. Brewster made a statement to the press that it was my own idea for Mr. Flanagan to come to the coast. Well, now, it just so happened that in the first 49 pages here, I came across that particular portion of our discussion in the previous closed hearing. And the matter was with reference to the number of man hours put into the design of the flying boat. I should say preliminary design before it was submitted to the government. And it was for such detail as that I suggested you send someone to the coast. And possibly that's why Mr. Flanagan was sent. But after my failure to accede to Mr. Tripp's wishes, Mr. Flanagan's course was entirely different. He wanted to go into Johnny Myers' expense accounts, and he went down to Neil McCarthy, my ex-attorney, and said, look, we know there's been a $100,000 payoff to Elliot Roosevelt. What about it? And, I mean, his whole attitude, evidently, was one of making trouble.
Well, now, here is Senator Brewster again, his comment concerning the committee investigator, Francis Flanagan.
Mr. Flanagan went out, I believe you said, on March 14th, and had GAO accountants there. And there are transcripts of the rather extended telephone conversations between Mr. Flanagan and Mr. Meader, which cover in great detail the circumstances of the next 2 weeks while Mr. Flanagan was there. There is a great deal of what, in my judgment, is matter of interest and value bearing on this matter as he began to uncover what was going on. and this was proceeding in routine fashion. The thing culminated on March 25th, I think. I won't fix the date exactly, but I think it appears here. When Mr. Flanagan, get me the date of the meeting when the subpoena was issued. When Mr. Flanagan reported he was having difficulty with Mr. Hughes, that he didn't want to let him see the record. He said that he didn't want him to see these expense accounts, which were then becoming a matter of some interest and concern. Before that, we hadn't known very much about them, but Mr. Flanagan began apparently to find some suggestions of them.
Now here comes a sensational charge made by Senator Brewster himself. A charge that Hugh Fulton, the original chief counsel of the Senate committee, this is back in the days when it was the Truman Committee, headed by President Truman, then, of course, Senator Truman, and when Senator Brewster was the ranking minority member of the committee. He said that Hugh Fulton had, in effect, propositioned him. Two committee investigators, who've already been mentioned in some of the previous excerpts, Francis Flanagan and George Meter, had told the senator that Fulton might represent Hughes in this investigation. Subsequently, Hughes called on Senator Brewster. Brewster became indignant, and he calls in his secretary to dictate the subject or the conversation which was taking place. And you'll notice that later in this excerpt, which is now 6 minutes long, the longest uninterrupted excerpt which we have, toward the end of this excerpt, you'll notice that Senator Brewster almost breaks up.
The matter finally went on to a point that I became somewhat incensed. And I punched my buzzer and called my secretary in, Mrs. Dustin, and I spoke very firmly and very emphatically to Mr. Fulton about what I thought about his conversation, for which I did not care. And I asked her to make a transcript as soon as it was over and he'd gone of what I had said in the matter. I didn't know, I never had occasion to look at it subsequently, but I have the transcript which she wrote down at the time, which refreshes my recollection as to substantially what I said after I asked her into the room. This is the transcript, dated April 3rd, 1947. Conversation between Senator Brewster and Hugh Fulton in Senator Brewster's office. I do not like your attitude in regard to committee reports. You say there may be a report without a hearing. Now, I want it distinctly understood that hearings will be held and reports will be gotten out in accordance with those hearings. I cannot say that one person will not be called. It may be that Snyder and Hughes and Jones or the whole list may be called. And I do not like your repeated statements to the effect that you assume such and such will be done in the committee. I think that is a substantially accurate transcript of what I said and which terminated our conversation. He walked along with me over to the Senate where I was then going and seemed to be considerably disturbed over the emphatic way I'd spoken, expostulated somewhat. He later returned to Mrs. Dustin and had certain further conversation with her, indicating that when he tried to be a friend, why, he got in trouble. Promptly thereafter, I tried
to be made part of the record as Exhibit A.
Promptly thereafter, I tried to get Mr. Meter and found he was out of town. I was leaving for Cairo that night, April 3rd, with the parliamentary conference, with Senator Barkley and others. And so I wrote this letter to George Meter, which is now a part of the committee files, although this only came to my attention last week when I was looking over the committee files and found the original there. And so whether you need that as an exhibit or the original is available. I have a copy here which I would like to read.
We'll make the original the exhibit.
Now, this is the letter I wrote after Hugh Fulton called on me. Mr. George Meter, Chief Counsel, National Defense Committee, Senate Office Building. Dear George, while you were away, Hugh Fulton came to see me about the Hughes affair, although he insisted he was not representing Hughes but was simply acting as a friend of everyone concerned. Apparently, Hugh had considerable knowledge regarding the case, which he had secured from Hughes or elsewhere, although some of his information was rather inaccurate, particularly dealing with relations between Hughes and Flanagan and the circumstances of the subpoena. I simply told Hugh that this case had been under investigation long before I was chairman, and came to my attention when Hughes asked for a meeting of the committee to hear his story in executive session, which we were very glad to arrange. And Mr. Flanagan went to Los Angeles to go over the record at Hughes' suggestion. When I say Hughes now, I mean Mr. Hughes, not Hugh Fulton. Until Hughes suddenly raised a question of access. I am not quite clear as to Hugh Fulton's interest, and I think probably the files and material in the matter should be treated as confidential. I trust that will be noted. Pending his disclosure of whom he represents, as he did not wish any misunderstanding of his status or relation to the committee, I felt he went a little far in his approach, and I am somewhat puzzled. Cordially yours. It seems to me that does not sound in terms such as Mr. Hughes here would suggest. I went to Cairo, and I returned 2 weeks later after visiting the entire Mediterranean littoral. And when I got back, I proceeded as promptly as I could to take the action that seemed to be clearly indicated, since there seemed to be an attempt to suggest that if I should continue further with this matter, I would have personal occasion for regret, that I and my associations were to be challenged and placed in possible disrepute if I dared to proceed with this matter. Now, here was a fundamental issue. If a member of the Senate or a chairman of the committee are to be intimidated by actions of this character, then senatorial investigations may well cease, because there is no one who desires particularly to have matters of this kind so thoroughly explored. And I had to face the decision, which I did. And I promptly appointed the subcommittee headed by Senator Ferguson, with the others whom I named, to handle this matter from then on, let the chips fall where they may. And from that time on, there has been...
Now, we've had to cut that one a little short because of time. Now, Senator Brewster, a few minutes later, is quoting a transcription of a conversation between George Meter and Hugh Fulton. And here is almost where Senator Brewster broke down again.
As this, I think, is the most revealing item in the record. Fulton stated that his only reason for discussing the matter with me was to appraise me fully of all the circumstances and to caution me that in the event of a hot public controversy, I should bear in mind that I might be in the thick of it with brickbats flying. I stated that I was fully aware of all such possibilities, but appreciated his thoughtfulness in calling them to my attention. Fulton stated that it would be his objective to, quote, contain, quote, the investigation to straight matters of performance of governmental contracts without getting into the sensational aspects of the matter, and advise. Now, this, I think, is extremely significant, and I assume Mr. Meter will confirm this, as this is his record, and advise that he hoped I would take an attitude of simply doing my work and making full information available to Senator Brewster, but not advocating or advising whether the committee should or should not proceed with the investigation, leaving that decision entirely to Senator Brewster. He adds, I made no comment upon this suggestion, and Fulton asked me.
I didn't get the last.
I made no comment upon this suggestion, and Fulton asked for none.
ABC has brought you 30 minutes of recorded highlights from today's testimony before the Senate War Investigating Committee. Howard Hughes and Senator Brewster held the spotlight. And tonight in an ABC interview, Howard Hughes, commenting on today's hearing, flatly charged that Senator Brewster was, as he said, a liar. Tomorrow, Hughes appears again on the stand, and ABC will bring you another report tomorrow night.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.